Oh, good evening. We have a new face tonight. Have you been here before? Welcome. Where did you hear about us? From Sonia. Nice. Welcome. Let's introduce around.
Mm-hmm. We have Dee, Fred,
Jeffrey,
Ross,
Eduardo,
John,
Isabella. Well, we have been studying, just beginning a study of Chogyam Trungpa's training the mind for compassion and cultivating loving kindness is the way he calls it. So it's we're just beginning, and in the meantime, I went to Logos and found Norman Fisher's version of this, which is a very nice book also. I'm going to stick with this one. I don't want to ask you to get two books, but if you have this one, this is enough, and then I'll share what Norman has to say as well. And then Donna Lynn sent me a list of all the slogans, on just a long list of what they are without any explanation. So, and that's very helpful, just to see a kind of rundown of how they develop. Starting out with preliminaries, and then becoming mind training, guidelines of mind training, and evaluation of mind training. Each one is fairly simple, and the one that we were discussing last week was about the self, how we experience the self, and how we understand what that is that we call the self. What is this exactly that we identify? And the encouragement was to, all through the week, carry through this kind of inquiry, trying to notice if there's a stable, fixed kind of person that is always the same that we call me. Who is this one that we call somebody? This is called examining the nature of unborn awareness. To look into our own mind and ask, what is the self? And, as Chogyam says, to get over our deception. Get over the premise that there is somebody fixed and all the same. And that will always be the same. Once you begin to explore it, you have to see that it can't possibly be that way. We have never been the same. We were a little bloody, squirming, bawling nubbin of flesh at the very beginning. And look at us now. We're nothing like that. And there was everything in between. Everything. So, there are two of these slogans. The first, the third slogan is the one I was just referring to. And looking at the basic mind with simple awareness is that one examining the nature of unborn awareness, just seeing what it is without adding anything to it. And he says in the end, you really can't do this. You can't look into your own mind. It doesn't work like that. And then to self-liberate even that. In other words, just sit down and be quiet. That's what the next one is. So that if you look for where the thoughts come from, you can't find them. And so you're driven, really, to see that the self is a dream. And that you can rest in not knowing. That you can feel the peace that comes with not being driven to keep recreating the self that we imagine we are. And just allow ourself to be whatever happens to be happening at the moment. So, that was your homework. And I don't know how far you went with it, but I hope you have some things to share. Ellie told me it was her wedding anniversary tonight, but she gave me a dream that she had last night that she wanted to share, where she was standing on a beach at the lake, and her husband was out in the water drowning and calling for help, and she refused to do anything about it. She just sort of shrugged and said, she thought she'd just take care of herself, that she might drown if she went out there. And she had all these excuses for not doing it. And she said, oh, she's been reading this. She thought maybe she got a lot out of it. So not exchanging self for other or rescuing. And I thought about it too, that in dreams, instructions are sometimes to notice that all the aspects of the dream are oneself, pieces of oneself. So you could say that the drowning person was Ellie also, and that there were aspects of herself that weren't rescuing. I think that works often for the convolutions of this mind that we call me, the stories that we make and remake and unmake. Wendy?
Ellie said you could share that. I'll ask her about it.
Well, I wouldn't have told you if she hadn't given me permission. In fact, she asked me to. Well, she's very honest and frank and selfless. Now, there's a question. Gone.
Yeah, well, she definitely had to go out to dinner tonight with him.
Make up for it.
So I was driving the other day in the vicinity of my job that ended last June. And just going on those rows, passing those offices and tilt-ups, it all came back. And I should stop by, but I didn't have time to do that. But it's just amazing what a different life I had then, you know, how I did that, getting up in the morning, going to the office, dealing with a lot of stressed out people, and software and tech glitches, and all that stuff that goes with work. Such a different life now. Now I'm kind of floating. It is a little more dream-like, although there's things I can put my hands on for sure. But it's flowing. You know. More relaxed and open. So that's the change. And then, but I know it's going to change even more. I was watching 60 Minutes about 90 some year olds the other night. And what their lives were like, and what kind of lifestyles lead to longevity. Very interesting. It's based on a study done at UC Irvine called 90 Plus. You can Google it and read about it. And all they're finding out.
So do you feel like a different person from the person that you were last May?
Yeah, well, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, my life's different. Still approach things kind of with an analytical planning mode, but I can let it go easier when things come up. Like when you suggested, we don't need a schedule for this Saturday. Okay.
You wouldn't have said okay last year.
Nope.
No. No, you would have had a few. Wonderful.
Contrary, at least in my own head, but and I do accept that we very much change constantly as people. And but I also feel like I don't change that much. Like it's little millions of incremental adjustments.
Oh yeah.
Before, and it even feels the older I get, the more bound I feel by how. Or not, like, there are clearer bounds to how much I can change, maybe. And I know, I feel like in Buddhism there's a lot of, well, no, not a lot, but I've sometimes heard people suggest this possibility for, like, instantaneously being different. And I don't think I believe that at all.
I think you're right. It's much more incremental.
Yeah, yeah.
it's a constant incremental change that we're always going through. But I think many people get into Buddhism thinking, feeling so unhappy about their life and wanting it to change and be something else and be someone else. And it doesn't work that way. In that sense, you really become more and more yourself, in the sense that you're not making yourself up anymore. You're just being whoever you happen to be at the time you are. So that's a no-self in a way, because you aren't defining it anymore. So it's in both ways, but in either sense, there's no big change and then you become somebody else. It's not like that. Actually, we get cooked down, into more and more whatever this life thing is that we are. But it's very mysterious. We really don't understand it very well. We don't understand ourselves very well, much less other people. I'd like to think I understood myself, but honestly, it's a continual surprise. And not always a happy one. Oh. So, and that's part of our practice, is to be more honest about what we discover about this embodiment that we are, this life and breath that is carrying us as we make our way, floating in that way. Yeah. So Chogyam goes on from here, from the self to forgetting the self, which is the same thing that Dogen suggests, as well as Buddha, that studying the self and acknowledging the dreamy quality of our nature, that Zazen itself becomes our resting place. That we can rest in the nature of our mystery, of being this, of just being, without giving it a name, without identifying it, and without qualification. It is just this. We are just this. You are just yourself. So that the mind becomes, as you say, open. And it's rested. And in our culture and in our time, there is, as you say, so much tension. People are so anxious, that finding Zazen and being found by Zazen is a tremendous boon to us. It gives us an opportunity not only to clearly and honestly see what comes up in our mind, and to see that our mind is so amorphous, that thoughts come, but we don't know where the thoughts come from. We don't make the thinking happen. The thinking is happening to us. and then we recognize it and acknowledge it if we're brave, and sometimes say, oh, you know, it's not like that. But it, even though, if we're clear, we have to see that what comes up, comes up. What's human is human. But as Chogyam points out in the study of returning to the self and then forgetting it and resting in Zazen, that we begin to see our basic goodness. There is so much negative thinking in our world, at least in the world that I meet, so many people who are angry with themselves, dislike themselves. There's a little girl who lived next door to me years ago who would always do something, make a mistake, and she'd say, I hate myself, I hate myself. And it just felt like a stab in the heart to hear her say so. But many, many people feel that way about themselves. And making a mistake is just the worst thing. It's like there's something in us that turns against us, even though there's just this one being. We turn into two and turn on it. So it's crucial that we have this sitting opportunity so that we can see through all that confusion and bewilderment into what is basically good about us. The truth of the goodness of us. He talks about it in terms of alaya, of the storehouse, which we've talked about before, about the aspects of the mind, of which alaya is the eighth consciousness. There's the six consciousnesses of the mind and body. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, consciousness. And then the sort of boss who keeps everything sort of in order. And then there's the alaya, which is it means storehouse, which is where we keep all of our experience, our conditioning, from the very beginning. Kind of storage that can look very, very messy and unrepairable. But if we sit with the alaya and, as Chogyam says, rest in it and allow it, we begin to see that it itself is our basic clear mind. We don't have to get rid of it. We don't have to try to escape it. We don't have to be ashamed of it. We can take our ease in our own being and be brave enough to recognize our goodness. So this is a really important step. These that we've just done, this self thing, this awareness and selfness, is how this whole study begins. We actually begin with those four principles, which I mean to memorize, and I haven't done. Does anybody remember them?
basics.
The basics, the preliminaries.
Impermanence.
Impermanence.
Life is a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Life is a miracle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're all going to die.
That's it. Yeah.
What's the last one?
That's the karma and
that's right.
Mm-hmm. And the inevitability of suffering because of karma. Yeah. So with that beginning, then it begins to unroll with a study of the self and then how to be this being. It's what Buddha did in his original teaching, where he noticed the suffering and noticed what the reason of suffering was, that it was clinging, that it was creating a self, and then trying to protect it. And that there are simple ways of finding peace. And they're all very ordinary and simple. The Eightfold Path is very simple. It's not any fancy, elaborate, deep study even. It's just maintaining trust in ourself and developing an honest view and telling the truth and getting good work. Just all very, very simple things. And doing zazen, which is sort of its basic support for all of it, because it keeps clearing the decks over and over again. There's no end to this being that is elaborated and continually elaborating itself. But in zazen, we drop and clear. So that when we get up, which is the next one, then we have some basis for navigating the world. So we'll talk about that next time. This navigating of the world calls it post-meditation, be a child of illusion. So just keep a childish appreciation for things. Stay in the moment and enjoy it and realize that life isn't all that bad, that for all the badness of it, for all the things that we keep being bombarded with, the information and the horrors and the fearful things that happen, even so, if we look carefully, we see. You see, even in the deepest hell realm, so this is the time when we can learn to do the taking and sending, it's called, or this Tonglen practice, because we become very aware in our childish delight in the world of the deep suffering that exists. And so we need, as we get up from zazen, from shikantaza, which is just being in clarity and trust, we get up, we need to operate and be operated in our life. And so Tonglen, taking in the suffering of the world, breathing it in, and then sending out all the loving kindness that we've found inside ourselves already, sharing it in whatever situation we find ourselves, however much suffering that we encounter, that we are the goodness and the kindness and the love that we can share. And the more we're able to share it, the more there is to share. We all know that. It happens every time. So this is homework. Go back to the Zazen part and study that Alaya. Find that basic goodness. And then see what happens when you get up. And see if you can't develop a way of getting up and being up that maintains in some way the wisdom that untalkable wisdom that is our sitting. And sustain it in our actions in our life. See how that works. Are there questions? Well, it's just about time. Well, I had an announcement too that tell you where this came from. This is what you all worked on at the session that Judith Putnam made. She is learning to be a sewing teacher and studying at Berkeley with the sewing teacher there. And she wanted to learn how to make an okesa, so she asked me if she could do that. And I told her I don't ever wear okesa every week because mine are so old and so worn out, they're falling to pieces. So she just hauled off and made this beautiful thing and sent some of it for the Sangha to sew on. So some of you have worked on this. And so I have something that I can wear every week if I want to. And maybe I will. It's a nice feeling. Yeah. So Britt just took some pictures of it, says Judith wants to see what it looks like. I have to tell her how sweet it is. Okay, shall we have a 1 minute sit?